Welcome to Breaking Free Podcast, your recovery, your way. I'm Tiffany.
And I'm Liv. You're in the right place if you want to explore what it means to be in recovery, to challenge the things that keep us small, and to learn how to thrive independently.
Together we are breaking free. Just a quick reminder that while I'm a nurse and a coach, and Liv is a coach, recovery advocate, and a writer, we are not doctors. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you need to, please, please see a doctor.
The Alana Club of Portland is proud to sponsor the Breaking Free podcast. Your recovery, your way, is at the heart of our approach to recovery support services.
Unity Recovery, an inclusive recovery community organization serving all of Philadelphia, is proud to support the Breaking Free podcast. Recovery is possible. Find your path to break free.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Today, we're going to be focusing on weight loss, why dieting doesn't work, and why it's harmful. Tiffany, do you want to start us off?
Oh, I love this topic so much. So here's the deal. Weight loss is something that we are encouraged to seek or work toward all the time. And that has to do with diet culture, which we did an episode on that. So episode 14, check it out if you haven't already listened to it. But the problem with it is that focusing on weight loss does not work. So restricting ourselves in any way, focusing on weight loss over the long term doesn't work.
Yeah. So you might lose weight initially.
Yeah. So that's why, you know, when people say, oh, that diet worked for me.
Yeah.
Initially, yeah, you may have lost 20 or 30 pounds. Absolutely. We can manipulate, you know, our food intake in a way that causes us to lose weight. Mm-hmm. But studies show over the long haul, so, you know, 5+ years, even 2 years out, a lot of times, the studies reflect that 85 to 95% of the time, people gain all of the weight back and often plus some.
Why do you think that is?
Well, our bodies are trying to protect us from famine, right? Mm. And so what happens is, well, there's multiple reasons, but what happens is that we restrict and we lose weight. And unfortunately, at the same time, we lose muscle mass and we slow down, our metabolism slows down, which actually I was just reading in a book about this. I was reading Body Respect. It's by the one of the founders of Health at Every Size. And she was talking about that actually, quote unquote, slow metabolisms are more efficient metabolisms because you utilize calories better. Like you retain all the, right? Like you retain the calories and you use more of the calories from your food, right? But we call it slow, but it's actually more efficient.
And that would be great if you were in a famine.
Totally. Because you would not need as much calories to sustain you.
But instead, we're using it as a shaming tool.
Yeah, we do. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, we shame people like, oh, you must have a slow metabolism, right? Our metabolism slows down. We lose muscle mass so that then when we quit restricting, when we break the cycle of restriction, we tend to want to eat more food because we've been restricting, right? The forbidden fruit. I wasn't allowed to have that. So now I want to eat all the whole pizza or whatever. Yeah.
The dirty food.
All the dirty food. Listen to the episode on clean, which was 13. The problem with clean. 13. Yeah. But, you know, so then when we break that restriction or that, you know, restraint, then we eat, even if we eat what we would have eaten previous to doing the diet, we're not able to burn that same number of calories anymore.
Fascinating.
So it makes complete sense. You'd gain the weight back. You can't just go back to eating the, you know, quote unquote, normally. You have to restrict. My chair is giving me trouble. You'd have to restrict forever, essentially. You'd have to maintain that same level of restriction forever and ever in order for the diet to continue to work.
So I understand that concept, and I understand the studies that say that it's not, you know, it's not an efficient way of losing weight. But what if you do want to lose weight? Like, what if you are have a medical condition and your doctor has said, you know, you have a lot of visceral fat, for example, around your organs, this is potentially dangerous, mm-hmm. you're at risk of all the things, right? All the language that the doctors tell you, that actually is not always true because they're sizist and you can be healthy at any size, right?
Yeah.
But what do you do if your doctor has said, like, for example, you need to have surgery, mm-hmm. but in order to have surgery, you've got to be a certain weight?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think that's really terrible. I feel like in the healthcare industry, we perpetuate that culture and shame and stigma, fat stigma for sure. But it's true. Like you said, the studies do show that dieting doesn't work. This is why health insurance doesn't pay for diets, because they're not effective.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's like medication has to be a certain level of effectiveness, right, for it to be approved and for insurance to cover it.
But hang on a minute. What about opioids? Like, how successful are those? Well, or is it that the profit margin's really high and that they've got all of the doctors to prescribe it? So.
Yeah, I mean, they are effective at treating pain, right? But they also cause harm, potentially, depending on the person.
Yeah, and you need more and more to have the same effect. But anyway, that's another episode. So point back is, to diet.
The point is that, you know, if you think about how effective a medication is to be approved and how many side effects and all that that can be present, and diets don't even meet that level of scrutiny, right?
Wow.
So, and the research really reflects this. So there's, you know, we've actually known since the 1940s that diets don't work. There was the people who didn't want to go to war were called conscious objectors, and they stayed behind and they did other things for the government. So they participated in studies and research. And so they restricted all of these men who were in their 20s, and they restricted them. You know, these guys, I think that they had an average of like 3,000 calorie a day diet. They restricted them down to around 1800 calories. Which, I mean, how many women do you know have been on 1600, 1200 calorie a day diets?
Oh my God, 1000 and below.
Yeah, like that's a pretty standard, like, oh, just restrict to this level. And these gentlemen became so obsessed with food that they were collecting recipes. These are 20-year-old men in the 40s.
Wow.
Collecting recipes. They would obsess about mealtime. Some of them would exercise extra, because the more you exercise, the more food you got in the study. Some of them broke into like the kitchen area and stole food.
Wow.
And then some of them felt so guilty about it, they'd purge after. So they had really interesting behaviors. Many of them developed long-term disordered eating. Mm-hmm. So, and this is restricting very little. And they did the study so that they could see the best way to feed someone after they had been through a famine. Mm-hmm. So that's why they were doing the studies. What we learned is that restricting and dieting caused all of this disordered eating behavior, even in otherwise normal, healthy, young 20-year-old men. So it's not just women. It's not just, you know, restricting to that level actually creates an obsession with food.
Which I think just compounds how harmful diet culture is, because it doesn't take account of the actual science that shows that diets don't work.
That diets don't work and that they're actually harmful, right?
Yeah, that profit's way more important.
Yeah, well, the profit and the goal of being smaller, if you achieve that goal, even short term, they don't look at the long term, and they don't look at the long term harmful effects. So there's another study done with twins to kind of rule out any genetic piece. And the more episodes of intentional, you know, like restricting for intentional weight loss one of the twins had, the more likely that twin was to have weight cycling and ultimately ended up slightly higher weight than the twin who didn't diet. So we're better off. The weight cycling itself is really harmful, and it's more of an indicator of health problems than staying a stable weight that's higher over time.
That's fascinating.
So, and then there's another study, The Biggest Loser. How many people have seen that show? Oh, I mean, you're in the UK. I don't know. Was it in the UK?
Oh, it was huge.
Yeah. So
we love American TV, even though we criticize it. You Americans are so loud.
It's terrible, right? It's terrible. At least with the TV, you can turn us down, I guess.
Yeah, we do.
So this, you know, The Biggest Loser, they actually did a study on the participants. And they did track them long term. And over the long term, they you know, the group of them, they did lose weight initially, a lot of weight. Their metabolism slowed down. Their muscle mass was reduced. And 6 years later, you know, most of them had gained all the weight back. All of them still had a reduction in metabolism and a reduction in their muscle mass. So that effect of having restricted stayed with them
long term.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. And yeah, I mean, I remember the show coming under a lot of scrutiny because of the conditions. Mm-hmm. You know, to lose weight in such an extreme way. Like, they're talking about losing 10, 20 pounds a week, some of them, yeah. weren't they? It was
yeah,
crazy.
And then they went home, and of course, they couldn't maintain that level. I mean, who can exercise that many hours a day and restrict to that level? I mean, you just can't. And on top of that, you know, that study really showed that there were long-term physiological effects that were harmful, right?
Yeah.
And so the show got kicked off the air because of that.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it?
That's fascinating.
So with all of that, so we know.
Oh, and the trainer, didn't one of the trainers have a heart attack? The super fit trainer had a heart attack, which just goes to show. Yeah. Well, the trainer, he was in his late 30s, early 40s, he had a heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah, so the thing is that dieting doesn't work, mm-hmm. right? And we get all of these insidious messages of like, oh, it's a lifestyle change or it's this or that, so that we don't – it's like we're being tricked that it's not really a diet, right?
Yeah.
So like Weight Watchers is now changing a lot of their language and trying to be more quote-unquote body positive, but it's still a diet, right? So it's still contributing to that message that we need to lose weight to be good enough, that we need to lose weight to be happy, that there's something wrong with us if we're not trying to strive to lose weight. But the thing is that there's that question. What if I need to lose weight? I can't tell you how often I hear this question. I just had a post on social media and somebody, had watched some of my trainings and reached out and said, like, what if I need,
what if the doctors told me?
Yeah. So unfortunately, the healthcare industry perpetuates this. There are studies that show that when we focus on health interventions versus weight loss, people have better outcomes. So, and this was done among like diabetic patients, so people with diabetes who focused on health interventions like blood sugar control had way better outcomes than if they focused on weight loss. So a lot of times, so a lot of times people lose weight and they're like, well, I felt better or my labs were better because when I lost weight. It's not the weight loss, right? It's like, oh, you're eating more veggies, you're getting more activity, you're, you know, all of these things, right?
Yeah.
But we associate health with weight.
Yeah.
And so we really have to disconnect those because unless someone is in a very extreme, and we can do a whole episode on BMI, BMI is not a good indicator of health and it was not designed for to measure anyone's specific health, right? So, you know, unless you are in a very low BMI or a very high BMI, your morbidity is actually not changed. So there's actually people who are in larger bodies who have, they live longer than people who are not. And the problem with focusing on these things in the healthcare industry is that people who are in larger bodies come in to see the doctor because they're having a health issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor says, you need to lose weight.
Yeah.
So there was a woman who had cancer and she was in a larger body and the doctors just told her she needed to lose weight. They dismissed her symptoms and she ended up dying of the cancer.
Oh my God.
So she actually, I don't remember if it was a video or a blog, but she wrote about it. And yeah, so it was really a powerful story and it was a good reminder of that. And it's really tragic. It's a good reminder that we are harming people when we just blanket prescribe weight loss.
I remember when I first came to America and I registered with a new doctor and the very first thing that she said was, you need to lose weight. And at that point, I was cycling.
I mean, why?
Well, because my BMI, right? And because that's what the computer told her.
Yeah.
And my what was fascinating is that at that time, I was cycling 100 miles a week.
Yeah.
And I was lifting really heavy weights. And I was the fittest I'd been in a very long time. Mm-hmm. Yes, I inhabit a larger body.
And I know you to be somebody who also cares about your body and takes care of yourself, right?
Yeah.
You do, you know, meditation, journaling, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And you eat, you know, nutritious food.
Yeah. And before I knew it, she'd switched out my medication to a medication which had a side effect of reducing my appetite. And she'd even talked about putting me on an appetite suppressant.
Yeah, because your appetite is bad.
Yeah, like, and that wasn't why I went there.
We have an appetite for a reason,
yeah,
folks.
Right.
Eat some food.
Yeah, because I was hungry.
Yeah.
I was cycling 100 miles a week. Of course I want to eat carbs.
Yeah. Weird. You need carbs to help you. Yeah, like have fuel for your body.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty interesting.
I think even at one point she was saying that walking wasn't a good form of exercise because it didn't break you into a sweat.
Yeah, doesn't burn enough calories.
Yeah.
And the only point of exercise is to burn calories,
right? Of course, right.
No, it has nothing to do with the physiological or psychological benefit.
No, don't be ridiculous.
Yeah, or fun or any of that.
Just have some Wellbutrin. That's the solution.
So, yeah, so it's really a shame. So it's really, and not only is it harmful to people in larger bodies, mm-hmm. but people who are in smaller bodies are, they are missed for things mm-hmm. that they could have going on, right? So the BMI miscategorizes people in larger bodies as unhealthy simply because they're in a larger body. Mm-hmm. And it miscategorizes unhealthy people who are in smaller bodies simply because they're in a smaller body. So you come into the doctor's office and you're in a normal BMI, quote unquote, then, you know, they're not going to be assessing really if you have an eating disorder.
Yeah.
They're not going to be assessing whether you have sleep apnea.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to necessarily be concerned to check your cholesterol, you know, and these are all things. People in all sizes of bodies have yeah. high cholesterol,
right.
which is problematic. It increases mm-hmm. your risk of stroke and heart yeah. attack. And right, people in all sizes of bodies have sleep apnea, although it's true. If you're in a larger body, you're at higher risk for that.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that it doesn't mean that your size means that you're unhealthy, right? And so this is, we have to make a disconnect. Weight does not equal health.
No.
Or size does not equal health.
No.
And so something I feel really, I get really angry because I worked at the hospital. I just left the hospital in November. I know exactly how much fat stigma there is,
yeah.
how shaming we are, and how often people don't come to the hospital or go to the doctor because they don't want to be shamed yeah. about their weight, right?
Which is why they come in with more extreme cases, right?
Yeah. So they come into the emergency room only after things are really out of whack, mm-hmm. right? And then it's like, well, now we're really going to have to work hard to kind of get you back in balance, right?
Yeah, and then they're shamed even more, which reinforces their belief that to go to the doctor is going to make them feel bad.
All right, we're going to take a pause here so that we can hear from our awesome sponsors.
The Alana Club of Portland is proud to sponsor the Breaking Free podcast. Your recovery, your way, is at the heart of our approach to recovery support services. As the largest and most diversely programmed non-clinical recovery support center in the United States, we've been proudly breaking barriers and forging new pathways for years to ensure everyone has a home in recovery. From peer mentoring to recovery CrossFit, from trauma-informed yoga to mindfulness training, the Alano Club of Portland has a recovery pathway that's right for you. Here at Unity Recovery, we believe recovery should be the expectation, not the exception. Whether you find support with mutual aid, harm reduction, medication, or yoga, your recovery is beautiful and worth celebrating. Learn more and become part of the recovery movement at unityrecovery.org.
And we're back. Yeah, I would say, I'd have to actually look at the numbers. I would say 75% of the women who come to work with me don't have a medical provider that they trust.
Yeah.
Because they've had bad experiences. And so I have to, yeah. that's part of my coaching.
Yeah.
Is like, we got to get you a provider. And of course, I have a list of providers that are great, you know, that I can trust, that mm-hmm. I, you know. But even amongst those providers, it's touchy. Some of them still, you know, suggest diets. And we've had conversations about that, you know, and there's good reason, they think, for doing it. And it's not to say that there isn't a time that a medical eating plan, you know, like if you have a bacterial overgrowth of your gut called SIBO, you may have a relief of symptoms if you eat a certain way, right? Yeah. But we also have to take into account the psychological effects. So is this going to lead to someone having disordered eating? And I would say, for me personally, being encouraged to go on a diet for my gut health really brought things to a head. And I really felt like I was going to develop a full-blown eating disorder.
Yeah. I'm the same. If I restrict in any way, yeah. it just is not helpful.
Yeah.
I just want to eat more.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's how I feel like the majority of people are. But we think that that means there's something wrong with us because we don't have willpower. But it's actually just normal. Like, there's a biological process happening.
Hunger is normal, folks.
You're hungry. Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah, so we've got all these studies that show that weight loss does not work. And like Liv said, then we still have this experience of going to the doctor and having, you know, the doctor say, well, you need to lose weight, right? So my answer to that would be find a different doctor who understands to help focus on health intervention.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you are feeling unhealthy, if you're uncomfortable, right? Yeah. Again, we can focus on health intervention.
What do they look like?
Yeah, what does that look like? It's different for everyone. If you have high cholesterol.
Yeah.
eat more fiber, take fish oil, get more exercise, right? Yeah. All those things can and reduce your stress, believe it or not.
Oh my God, how do you do that?
Yeah.
Don't be an entrepreneur, folks.
Yeah, so for people who are diabetic, being in the hospital, the stress of being in the hospital makes their blood sugar out of control. We have to treat them with insulin, even if they're not insulin dependent at home. So, you know, like I had a patient recently, well, I guess it wasn't that recent since I hadn't worked at the hospital, but, you know, within the last few years, that was like, I just don't understand. I mean, at home, like my blood sugar has been rock solid. I'm like, you're in the hospital. You're stressed out. He's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's right. So I have a family member who has diabetes who went through some really stressful life events and some health problems. And she was like, I don't understand. My blood sugar has been out of control. Same thing. We really looked at, what have you been eating? Same, you know, her eating patterns were the same.
Yeah.
It was really about stress and also her physical activity was less because she wasn't feeling well.
Yeah.
Those two things, right? So you can focus on blood sugar control, but focus on it in a very holistic way. There's many things that affect our blood sugar.
Like sleep, right? Sleep. Tell me about sleep.
If you have disordered sleep, it is going to affect everything,
right?
So I can't tell you how many people have come to me. I just had a client who we've been working together for a while, and, you know, that's part of my intake. It's like, how's your sleep? And she's like, oh, it's not great. And I had her do a little app on the phone, you know, track it. And I mean, I was like, listen, I have sleep apnea, and mine is better than yours, right?
Wow.
So, you know, and she's young and in a pretty, like, she's probably in the normal BMI range, you know, quote unquote. And sure enough, she had sleep apnea.
Wow.
And so, you know, she was exhausted, right? Like didn't have motivation to exercise, felt stressed out all the time, craved carbohydrates all the time. No wonder.
Wow.
She's exhausted, right? So there are so many things we can do. You know, if your joints hurt, you could talk to your doctor about supplementation. You know, you can talk to your provider about what kinds of exercises might, right? Like go move around in a pool. The more we move our joints, the better they're going to feel.
And finding an exercise that you enjoy. I remember the first time that I had some coaching, and it was when I felt most miserable in my body. And the coach actually focused on health intervention. She said to me, you know, what do you enjoy doing exercise-wise? And I think at that point, exercise was a dirty word because I associated it with punishing regimes of cardio and...
To make up for a milkshake or whatever.
Right, yeah. It was like, it was a tool of punishment. And I actually found myself going into a bike shop on a lunchtime walk because she challenged me. She said, you know, why don't you start walking 10,000 steps a day? So I did. And I loved the challenge. And then I found myself going to this bike shop and buying a bike. I was like 34 years old buying a bike.
Awesome.
And I hadn't cycled since I was at school. And I think I remember saying to the guy, I'm not sure if I remember how to do this. and then I loved it. Awesome. I gave up my bus pass.
It's like riding a bike.
Right? You never forget. So yeah, I gave up my bus pass. I cycled everywhere. It was my main mode of transport. And it's where, and I feel really sad at the moment that I can't cycle anymore because, well, right now, because I have a lot of pain in my arms. But yeah, it's where I get most of my creative ideas. It is something I really loved.
It's awesome. Yeah. So focusing on other ways and, and also I think getting down to, like, you know, people say I feel heavy or I feel like I need to lose weight. What is that feeling about? Is that an external should? Like I should be a smaller size or there's something wrong with me if I'm not striving to lose weight? Or is that, you know, if you're feeling heavy, do you have some emotional burdens that are weighing on you?
That's a really good point.
Right? Or is it, you know, my clothes feel tight. Well, maybe your clothes aren't the right size for you.
Yeah, go buy some bigger clothes.
It doesn't matter what size your body is. You deserve clothes that fit you right.
And I think what reinforces that belief around sizing is when you go to a regular store and it doesn't go to your size, right? Is, oh, well, I should lose weight. And that's not necessarily the case. It's just that you need to go to a store that has your size. You know.
And I realize there's some privilege there, right? Not everyone can afford, although in Portland we have this great, it's called Curvy Chic, and they have this awesome, like, huge resale.
What?
A couple times a year. It's called Curvy Chic, and it's...
Why haven't we been?
I know, it's amazing. Yes. Every time I see it, I'm like, oh, it's this weekend, you know.
Oh, but, no.
Anyway, so we do have some, we're fortunate to have some resources in Portland that are, you know, that you don't necessarily have to be higher income to afford. Because they do charge more, you know, for larger sizing, which is really crummy. But the point is that, you know, look at what is the underlying issue here? Mm-hmm. What am I really, you know, like, I was just talking to somebody about this around the word bored, like I'm bored. Well, bored could mean a lot of different things, right? Like, are you fatigued and therefore you don't want to do anything?
Are you lacking motivation?
Like, yeah. Are you not having satisfaction in your life? Mm-hmm. Is your job mundane? Like, what does that mean for you, right? So looking at that in terms of I feel heavy or I feel like I need to lose weight, like if my joints hurt, okay. Yeah. Then, you know, focusing on my joints hurt, mm-hmm. what can I do to improve my joint health, right? It isn't about restricting, you know? Yeah. If you feel low energy, like, sure, eating some veggies would probably be really helpful in increasing your energy, or maybe you need more sleep or whatever, right? The point is, like, you can have additive goals that really do. I'm not saying throw nutrition out the window.
Yeah.
Eat some kale. Move on.
She loves kale.
I do. I love kale so much. If you don't love kale, eat some spinach, eat some broccoli. If you have an aversion to vegetables, maybe go see a hypnotherapist. I don't know. But like, you know, I mean, and you don't have to, right? It's not a moral issue. But like, think it would make you feel better to eat veggies. Yeah. Or if you have the experience of feeling better when you eat some veggies. Great. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that you have to completely restrict, you know, any other foods from your life.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I, for a long time, I've said to people, oh my God, if someone gave me a bowl of chips, or we call them crisps, or a bowl of broccoli, I would always go for a bowl of broccoli. And people thought I was really weird. And then I found out that I had the MTHFR mutation. Mm. So my body was actually telling me I need folate, which was fascinating. Because again, the diet culture is, you know, you should be doing this, that, or the other.
Yeah.
And actually, my body has the innate wisdom that I need. Yeah. I don't need someone to tell me externally what to do.
That's awesome. Exactly. And that's what intuitive eating is all about. We're definitely going to do an episode on that.
I can't wait.
Yeah. But, and you know, Liv, you have had that experience with me. Like, we traveled together recently, and it was kind of a stressful experience. And I really do love kale. I eat it actually every morning with breakfast. And so I was like, you know, we'd been stressed out and we finally are getting settled at our place. And I had gotten this like kale and some chicken and like put it in a to-go box. And then when we got to the place, I sauteed it up.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is so good. And she's like, you just needed your kale.
Whereas I have a 2-hour massage and I'm still like, oh my God, I need more.
Yeah, right. So everybody's bodies are different. Yeah. So I just need that. And, you know, I get on the weird, like, blueberry kicks. And then there's other times where I really want a piece of cake, you know. Yeah. I want that satisfaction and that fun. And I probably am craving the carbs or the fat or something too, right? So, yeah. So our bodies definitely have that innate wisdom. And by trying to focus on weight loss by restricting, we are really fighting against our body.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it doesn't work.
No.
Right? And even if it did work, we need to look at, like, you know, the short term. We really have to look at the long term consequences, which is both physiological, so that, you know, we're reducing our metabolism, we're reducing our muscle mass, we're reducing our ability to handle those calories. Also, the psychological effects, right? Mm-hmm. So it tells us that we're not good enough. We had no willpower. We couldn't do it. There's something wrong with us. We broke that cycle. And now, you know, we broke out of that restriction and now we're eating everything, right? Because it was all forbidden.
Yeah.
And then we have shame and we get into this total spiral. So, oh gosh, I think you can tell I'm really passionate about this.
I love listening to you. It's actually really nice to have a moment where I can sit and listen and not be the one doing all the talking, all the writing.
Liv is definitely the recovery writer, the expert there, and this is more my forte. But
it's weird though, because when I started writing in the recovery arena, I was writing about food,
health and wellness.
Yeah, because that was something that's not talked about in recovery, and I think I was so passionate about it because I found myself in meetings where people were eating donuts and drinking black coffee and smoking. And I couldn't reconcile in my mind how you were getting so spiritually well, mm-hmm. But still being unhealthy in a sense where you're potentially damaging your body. And I didn't like the idea that we were saying to somebody that they were a food addict.
Yeah.
You know, or a sugar addict.
Yeah, sugar addict.
Whole episodes on that, you know, but I firmly believe that, you know, when we get into recovery, you know, our brain chemistry is all out of whack. Well, mm-hmm. our whole body is out of mm-hmm. whack, right? And by restricting ourselves or, you know, doing extreme things without actually taking the time to heal mm-hmm. and to listen to what our bodies are asking us for is potentially really harmful.
Yeah, I love your take on that for sure. It's definitely, it's a really interesting paradigm, right? Like you come in and we almost joke about like, oh, I just survive on coffee and cigarettes. And,
well, I was told right? to. And I was sugar. Told. Mm-hmm. And actually it says in Living Sober, it recommends that you eat candy.
Yeah, eat candy as a substitute, right? And
your body
times,
needs it.
Mm-hmm, and then, you know, it's so funny to think about like your gut bacteria when you first get sober, especially like wine drinkers, you know,
oh, yeah.
like it's all off and then we're just feeding it, you know, candy. And it's not to say, again, we don't want to restrict that necessarily, but we need to get some good nutrition in there, right? Like yeah. gentle nutrition, and we need to feed ourselves regularly.
Yeah.
So it's like this is all or nothing, black or white, mm-hmm. like eat, you know, coffee or drink coffee and donuts and eat, you know, smoke cigarettes.
Don't
right?
eat the cigarettes, please.
But then once you have a problem with sugar because that's what your body's like surviving on,
yeah.
then oh, now you're a sugar addict,
right?
And now you've just transferred your addiction.
Or maybe you're absolutely exhausted and your body is trying to recover and repair all of your organs that you've damaged.
Yeah So instead, like, where's the balance, right? Where's right. the middle of the road? And so that's really when we'll go into intuitive eating more, but that's really to me the answer to the weight loss question is like let's take care of ourselves. The breaking free solution. Yeah. Like focus on health mm-hmm. and some gentle nutrition, but with balance, like so that you don't feel like you can never, you know, have ice cream.
You can eat cake.
That's the breaking free solution. Just eat cake.
Right. But one of the principles of intuitive eating, and this is a little taster, folks. You had me when you said, I give myself unconditional permission to eat. Mm-hmm. That blew my mind. Just
it's a
think
really
about
empowering
that.
Thing.
Oh my God.
Awesome. Oh, this has been a really fun episode. I know we've gone on a little long, so thank you so much for sticking with us. We really appreciate you listening. Be sure to join us next week as we dive further into this intuitive eating topic.
Thanks, folks.
Thank you for listening to Breaking Free Podcast, Your Recovery, Your Way.
We want to hear from you.
Email us at hello@breakingfreerecovery.com or join our Facebook group, Breaking Free Community.
Tell us what Breaking Free means to you.